performed against a fellow heathen Turk. He found the highest favour in all eyes, a valiant warrior who was also wise, and in deportment meek as any maid. He never spoke unkindly, never played the villain's part, but always did the right. He truly was a perfect gentle knight. But now to tell of his array, he had good horses, but he wasn't richly clad. His fustian tunic was a rusty sight, where he had worn his hauberk for the night, was just back from an expedition, when his pilgrimage he hastened to begin. There with him was his son, a youthful squire, a lover and knight bachelor to admire. His locks were curled as if set by a press. His age was 20 years or so, I guess. In stature he was of an average height, and blessed with great agility and might. He'd ridden for a time with cavalry in Flanders and Artois and Picardy, performing well in such a little space, in hopes of standing in his lady's grace. He was embroidered like a flower bed, or meadow full of flowers, white and red. He sang, or else he fluted all the day. He was as fresh as is the month of May. His gown was short, his sleeves were long and wide, and well upon a horse the lad could ride. Good verse and songs he had composed, and he could joust and dance, drew well, wrote gracefully. That night he'd love so hotly without fail, he slept no more than does a nightingale. He was a courteous, humble lad and able, and carved meat for his father at the table. Now he had brought one servant by his side, a yeoman with no more he chose to ride. This yeoman wore a coat and hood of green. He had a sheaf of arrows, bright and keen. Beneath his belt, positioned handily, he tended to his gear most yeomanly. His arrow feathers never drooped too low, and in his hand he bore a mighty bow. His head was closely cropped, his face was brown. The fellow knew his woodcraft up and down. He wore a bracer on his arm to wield his bolts. By the side were his sword and shield, and on the other, mounted at the hip, a dagger sharply pointed at the tip. A Christopher of silver sheen was worn upon his breast. A green strap held his horn. He must have been a forester, I guess. There also was a nun, a prioress. A smile, a very simple one and coy. Her greatest oath was only, by St. Loy. Called Madame Aglantine, this nun excelled at singing when church services were held, intoning through her nose melodiously. Then she could speak in French quite fluently, after the school of Stratford at the Bow. The French of Paris wasn't hers to know. Of table manners she had learnt it all, for from her lips she'd let no morsel fall, nor deeply in her sauce her fingers wet. She'd lift her food so well she'd never get a single drop or crumb upon her breast. At courtesy she really did her best. Her upper lip she wiped so very clean that not one bit of grease was ever seen upon her drinking cup. She was discreet and never reached unseemly for the meat. And certainly she was good company, so pleasant and so amiable, while she would in her mien take pains to imitate the ways of court, the dignity of state, that all might praise her for her worthiness. To tell you of her moral consciousness, her charity was so great that to see a little mouse caught in a trap would be enough to make her cry, if dead or bleeding. She had some little dogs that she was feeding with roasted meat or milk and fine white bread, and sorely she would weep if one were dead or if someone should smite it with a stick. She was all tender heart right to the quick. Her pleated wimple was of seemly class. She had a well-formed nose, eyes grey as glass, a little mouth, one that was soft and red, and it's for sure she had a fair forehead. It must have been a handbreadth wide, I own, for hardly was the lady undergrown. The beauty of her cloak I had